The Sears catalog of my youth gave specific names to household objects. Everyone knew that dads wore shirts. The catalog gave me the words for particular types of shirts: pinstripes or plaid, long-sleeved or short-sleeved, button-down or spread collars. For a Christmas gift in 1974, I received a field guide to the birds, and the moment I opened its pages, birds were no longer mysteriously generic things. My field guide cataloged the particular, making me both aware of the myriad possibilities and interested in looking closely at every bird's every feature. When I identified my first bird, a chickadee, it was like getting a delightful package I'd ordered from the Sears catalog, but also a splash of cold water in the face. These chickadees had been in Baker Woodlot all along on every walk Russ and I had taken there, but until that moment they'd been invisible to me. Now, whenever I saw a bird, I paid attention to its particular features. Soon I could instantly recognize chickadees, and by scrutinizing the features of non-chickadees, I could find them in the field guide. I'd been to Baker Woodlot at least a dozen times before I took up birding, and birds were there every time. Now that I had a field guide, suddenly I could see them. The ducks on the Red Cedar River on campus morphed into mallards, and now I could distinguish drakes from females, adding richness and nuance to my concept of ducks. In that first year, I identified 8 different duck species swimming in the very spot in Chicago along Lakeshore Drive, where Russ and I had gone countless times to see sailboats. Yet before, if I'd noticed ducks at all, they were simply ducks. Before the year's close, I saw my lifer snowy owl flying low over a sidewalk right there along Lakeshore Drive, its eyes meeting mine. This new world of particular cataloged birds was not just a rich one, it was magical. Catalogs show not just a bunch of items, but also a price for each one. My field guide used words like common and rare, general types of habitat, and seasons of the year, along with range maps, to give me a general idea of how much I needed to invest to find each bird. I discovered a better figurative price list a couple of weeks after I started birding in a booklet, Chicagoland Birds, Where and When to Find Them. It said 372 species had been recorded within 50 miles of the city, 200 occurring regularly, with 173 breeding there. For every fairly regular species, the book had a little graph showing how common it might be in Chicago from month to month, and listed the habitats and some specific hotspots where each could be found. If a bird in the field guide struck my fancy, I could look it up in my Chicagoland Birds book to see how likely it was that I could find it in or near the city. When I could get to a birding hotspot listed in the book, I was guaranteed to see a bunch of birds, and even when I couldn't, just walking in our old neighborhood, I was easily spotting chimney swifts and nighthawks, juncos and white-throated sparrows, rose-breasted grosbeaks and northern orioles on the exact same blocks where for the previous 23 years I'd noticed nothing but house sparrows, robins, and the occasional cardinal. How could I have missed so very much for so very long? Little by little, my love for each particular bird drew particular plants into my sphere of understanding, too. To love goldfinches is to love thistles, despite their thorns. It would cost time and money to explore America in order to see all the species cataloged between my field guide's covers, but unlike the products in a Sears catalog, the birds in my golden field guide are priceless in the literal as well as figurative sense. The best things in life really are free, and my little field guide, which cost all of $4.95, was truly golden. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.